Okay, friends, welcome to this chapter number 6, which is titled as Organizing. Among the 7 processes we talk about in Principles of Management, organizing is the second one which we are discussing right now. In chapter number 5, I spoke about planning at length, the various aspects of planning. And my emphasis, if you notice, is on the behavioral aspect of what we need to do to make these things happen. See, the treatment to this subject is slightly different from the conventional treatment which you give for principles of management. What we are doing right now is, we are not only talking about the subject, but we are also imbibing you into a type of a behavior which will make the subject meaningfulness application into your lives. All of you will appreciate that you become good managers when this becomes a behavior. I'm a behavioral trainer. And I also deal with all these processes at length as a consultant. So when these two things have to match, all of you will agree that we need to understand how to convert it into action. So with this background, which I have already spoken about in the earlier chapters, I would like all of us to align ourselves into that thinking. Now, coming back to this slide, which you see on your screen, there is this word called organize, and there is, you can see one fish looking in this direction. An organized school of fish that is moving in this direction. Another fish is going in the opposite direction, and another fish formation type of a school of fish going in the direction. Now, this formation is what is organizing. Is the formation important? Anyway, they'll reach the destination. These fish, or each of these tiny fish, will reach the destination, and they're going in a group. There must be a purpose for going in a group, right? I can work independently towards whatever I have been told to do. Okay or not okay? I think it's okay, right? Somebody else can do what he does in his own way. So each one of us have got our goals for which we are engaged in the company. Wait a minute. Is it that my goals are independent of your goals? No. So my goals and your goals have to come together, isn't it? Because my goal G1, your goal G2, somebody else's goal G3, all of them coming together will give you the major goal called capital G of the company. Obviously, my goal and your goal have to get integrated. Underline the word integrated. So we don't work independently, we don't work dependently, we work on interdependency. Since we are interdependent, there is a certain purpose of keeping things in an orderly fashion. It's a team activity. Individuals are contributing their own individual unique competencies and skills. But over and above that, they have to also align themselves with the organization needs. So when we say organizing, there are two words that come to my mind. One is putting everything in an order, and then see that the orders are all linked with each other. The linkage part of it is also important. I can have a table which has got a number of objects kept there. Now, if those objects do not have any linkage in terms of utility, then that is not the organizing I'm talking about. I want to do some data processing, right? So I have a computer, I have a printer, and I have a, let's say, a scanner, and the usual keyboard and the mouse and all are there. Now this tells me that this is an organized table in which I'll be doing data processing. I'll be churning out some data, some spreadsheets. Okay, I may be churning out some data, some documents. Now, all this are aid to the process. But in this, if I organize something which is not generic in nature, generic means not to do with the data processing. If I keep some other objects in a proper systematic manner, will it make sense to the activity? No. So we are into some sort of a disciplined approach of putting the resources together. Now, what is organizing? Organizing is nothing but structuring the resources after planning and before action. I'll repeat, structuring resources after planning and before action. I mentioned in the earlier module the importance of pausing before you act. After planning, one needs to pause. The purpose of pausing is to reset all the resources in a proper order. That too, resources which are reset, creating linkages. They have to be connected with each other. Now, this linkage based restructuring of resources is coming under this topic called organizing. And from there, that emerges a word called organization. So when we say, when we refer to a company as an organization, it is implied that there are linkages of resources, manpower, machines, materials, money, methods. All these resources are properly organized, are put in a particular order in an array, and then these are linked with each other. Merely putting the resources in order is not enough, but the linkages have also to be created. It is a combination of the structure and the linkages that make organizing happening. Many a time we don't do this. Again, I go to the personal life of each of us. Do I organize my day after I plan my day? Do I put the requisite jottings in my book, in my notepad? Do I have a flow chart? Do I know what resources I need to reach a place? Do I do this at the workplace, even when I'm delegating work to my subordinates? Check out. You have the answer. So, as you know, there are 7 functions of management which we discussed in the earlier chapters. After the SMART goals are fixed, the first and the foremost function is planning, which we have discussed earlier in the chapter number 5. As detailed earlier, there are 4 resources, namely men, machine, materials and money, which have to be brought together in the proper proportion as per plans. When we talk about organizing, it's not only about organizing of men, but also the organizing of machines, materials and money. In any treatment given in the subject, in this topic on organization or organizing, you come across typically organization structure, which is to do with manpower. So people expressly believe that organization chapter or organization topic is all about man organization, the organization of manpower. That's not the only organization. When we say organization, it's an organization of materials also, organizations of money, organizing of machines, organizing of methods. So each one of them has to be done, but what is visibly seen as a main driver is the organization of manpower. Hence, in most of the books, we talk about the organization, referring to the organization of manpower, which is depicted in the form of an organization chart. So my contention to all of you is that please expand your vision, please expand your thinking about organizing into all other areas wherein you have planned and you're about to execute. Between in planning and execution, there needs to be a pause. And during the pause, I'm putting all the jigsaw pieces together, connecting them properly so that it makes sense to me. So when it makes sense to me, my business doesn't become an adventure. It becomes a designed, purposeful action. This is one area where people are not really doing much of work, unfortunately. Even structured organizations, when you see the organization chart, there are few things which are nebulous, they're not very clear. Whether it is deliberate or otherwise, the point is an organization chart has to be clear. There can't be 2 questions or 3 questions about a certain position, about a reporting format, about the various lines of authority. It has to be very clear cut and it should be universally clear to everybody. That speaks of a transparent, trustworthy organization with a lot of integrity. In some organizations, we do not even have an organization chart. And they have their own reasons, right or wrong, but that's not a good practice. If an organization needs to have a credibility in the market, it has to have a trust in the market, a name in the market, it has to conduct itself with a lot of integrity, then it needs to have these systems in place. Right? So, when we talk about organizing, it is not only about organizing of men, but also the organizing of machines, materials and money. After planning, we should not jump to actions. Organizing is a function for preparing for action. Before we start any action, the resources must be properly mapped. Whatever might be the business objectives, there is a need for organizing, which comprises structuring of the resources in a systematic manner with a view to achieve the preset goals of any endeavor with linkages. Now, what are the functions that are involved when you do an organizing process? What are the functions? First and foremost, we determine what are the activities, determination of activities. What are the various action steps we need to do on a time-bound basis? It includes deciding a division, deciding and the division of various activities, breakup required to achieve the objectives of an organization. The entire work is divided into various parts, and again, each part is subdivided into various subparts. For example, the purchase work may be divided into requisition of items, placing of order and storage, etc. So there is a activity or a particular activity called purchase of materials. So those have to be further subdivided into creating a requisition, which is a request for the item to be purchased, placing of the order by the purchase department or the purchase officer. When the materials come, there could be a materials inward inspection, for all you know. Then there will be a storage, and then further it could be issue of the materials into the shop floor. So these are the various activities that we need to organize. Obviously, organizing means I need to have some structure, identifiable structure which I can approach, and I know it works. It's got an identifiable label, and then we know that that is one place where whenever you want to see what is stored, you can go to the storage bin. Whenever you want to know where is the requisition to be done, I know who is going to do the requisition. So these are important, so that we know exactly, we have a fix on who is doing what, where things are located, right? Next comes grouping of activities. Similar activities, identical activities require identical resources. Now when we say functional vertical like a materials department, everything and anything to do with materials is handled by that department. So all the materials grouping activities are put there. Requisition, sourcing, the materials arrive at the plant, and then after that we go through inward inspection. Some rejections take place, it goes back to the supplier. Whatever is inspected and kept in the stores is issued to the shop floor, and then the shop floor converts the materials into finished goods and assemblies. So all, anything to do with materials is handled by the materials department. Are they handling it in isolation? No, they have to handle in tandem, in coordination with the production and with other departments also. But it's important for them to know that their functional demand is they are experts in materials, and all the similar activities of materials are grouped under one roof or one department. For example, the activities of a sales such as canvassing, advertisements and debt collection are grouped under sales department. Okay. Next comes allotment of duties to specified people. Having done that, we need to know who is going to do what. So material inward. Now who is handling it? Mr. X, Mr. Y or Z? That should be specified. In order to ensure effective performance, the grouped activities are allocated or allotted to specified competent people, persons specialized in their fields, and adequate staff members are appointed under them and are appropriately trained. This is a preparatory before the action, right? Next comes delegation of authority. Having done that, I need to tell them what to do, pass on the work that needs to be done, a division of work as you call it, and then assignment of duties or allotment of duties to specified persons is followed by delegation of authority. While delegating authority, responsibility is also fixed by them, on them. For example, the production manager may be delegated with the authority to produce the goods and fixed with the responsibility of producing quality of goods. So it is expressly understood that the production manager has to take up the delegated task, maybe from the works manager, to ensure that the goods are produced on time in the proper quantity and the proper quality. So the authority is given to him by virtue of his position as a production manager, and with that he is supposed to be responsible in producing goods in numbers and quality. Okay. Taking it further, defining relationships, very important. The linkage I talked about is very important. Who is reporting to whom? Who has to coordinate laterally with whom? Now this relationship has to be properly defined. otherwise there will be chaos. When a group of persons is working together for a common goal, it becomes necessary to define the relationships between them or among them in clear terms. Each person has to know as to who is his superior, from whom he has to receive orders and instructions, and to whom he is answerable. Each superior must know what authority he has and over which persons. So he must know upward and downward, where is he standing, what sort of relationships he has in terms of the call of his duty, right? Next comes coordination of various activities, which I told you is a horizontal function, interacting with other departments to get things done, departments which matter as far as your work is concerned. The delegated authority and the responsibility should be coordinated by the chief managerial staff. This is a terminology given by the HOD or someone, you can say that higher person, the person who's in charge of the particular department. And there must be a separate and responsible person to see whether all the activities are going on to accomplish the objectives of the organization or not. There are two functions, directing and coordination. So the concerned person, the chief managing staff, as we are indicating it here, has to ensure that there is a overall directing properly taken care of effectively, and the coordination also takes place pretty well. Okay. Now we come, then we say define and fix the duties. We talk about the principles of organizing right now. Okay. So we define and fix the duties, responsibilities and authority of each worker. The activities at all levels of organization structure should be geared up to achieve the main objective of the organization. There shouldn't be any cross purposes at which people are working. One department is very diligent, it produces goods of good quality and good quantity on time. But another department, the warehouse, or maybe the marketing department, is not reaching the goods to the customer or the dealer. Now this can create a dissonance. So we have to ensure that all levels of organization at all departments are working in tandem with the goal of the organization. Deciding and division of various activities required to achieve the objectives of an organization. Identical activities are grouped under one roof, under one individual or one department, which I have already explained. Then we talk about coordination must exist among the workers. The delegated authority and responsibility should be coordinated by the chief managing staff, and assignment of duties or allotment of duties to specified persons is followed by delegation of authority. While delegating of authority, responsibility is also fixed. Each person is responsible for the work completed by him. Each person is responsible for the work completed by him. While allocating duties to persons, the extent of liabilities of the person should be clearly explained to the concerned person. Meaning, every work has got a content which you love to do and a content which you may not like to do. Every work has got certain amount of growth related aspect which may appear to be risky, which may appear to be not palatable to you, because it disturbs your comfort zone. Now we have to give an overall picture to the person that this is what your work is all about, A plus B plus C plus D. Many a time we find that managers are only giving the good news that this is what you need to do. When the person starts working on the job, he starts facing challenges for which he has not been prepared. And then the dictum goes that, you know, you have to learn it on the job. Everybody learned it, I learned it, so you also learn it. It is advisable, recommended rather, that, you know, you tell him that these are the rigors of your job, these are the things you need to do as challenges. Because when you tell him, he is prepared. It should not happen that, you know, you have not told him and then he takes up the job and a particular rigor comes to him and he is not willing to accept. He may feel strongly against it and one fine morning he may even quit the job. Many times employers, managers, recruiters do not tell the full picture. And when they do not tell you the full picture, what happens is people join, they work on assumptions, and when the real work comes, they are taken by surprise. The organization by default or design did not explain the job functions totally. Ensure that that is done. The work should be completed with optimum members in optimum time with optimum resources and within the right time. I am using the word optimum, not maximum or minimum. Minimum of course is ruled out. Now you cannot stretch and say I want maximum output from you. minimum time. Initially, it doesn't happen. Over a period of time, people do give optimum output. But we have to ensure that these people are going through a particular type of an output, which is expected from them, given their skills, given their experience, given their background. Okay? The organization should distribute the work in such a way that there should be an equal status and equal authority and powers among the same line officers. Who are the line officers? An organization has got a structure, the organization pyramid as you call it, or the organization chart. People at the same horizontal levels are called as a line level. So we must ensure that people at the same level are having equal status in terms of, let us say, the designation manager, manager materials, manager marketing, etc. Okay, the nomenclature is not very important, but they must be able to get the equal status in terms of power, authority, responsibility, equal authority to take care of things, and the remuneration or the pay or the compensation is also comparable at that level. This is a part of any scientific process. A subordinate should receive the instructions and directions only from one superior. This is a scalar principle. This is a part of the what we learned in Henry Fayol's 14 principles. One superior. I do come across people who keep telling me that I have more than one boss. More than one boss means more chaos. You cannot take orders from different people and start getting into pushing and pulling. Of course, we have a modern system, a modern type of a structure called matrix organization, but the working is different, where we have multiple reporting. It's not actually reporting, something else. But in this case, we are talking about the importance of one subordinate has only one boss. One boss may have a number of subordinates, but one subordinate needs to have only one boss. The line of authority flows from the top level to the bottom level. It also establishes the line of communication, clear cut, so that there is no garbling of information, no wrong things coming to your table. Taking it further, the major plan is subdivided into sub-plans, which are taken by groups or departments, and all these groups have to cooperate to attain the main objective. Everybody has to cooperate. This cooperation comes through coordination. Various departments, various groups, each one doing its own specialized function, they have to create linkages. There are a number of decisions taken by the officers to run the business. If a complicated problem arises, more than one member examines the problems and takes decisions. Whenever the decision is taken jointly, it gives a benefit for a long period. In other words, it's a group activity. Whether it's complicated or non-complicated, it's important that the group is kept informed that they are involved in the decision-making process. Two heads are better than one. Many heads are better than one. And that is very important for us to see that we are organizing things in a proper manner. We discussed nature of organizing. What does it mean? Organizing is having what type of a quality? It implies division of labor, dividing the labor through delegation, coordination among the various people who are lateral, clearly defined objectives in every vertical function down the line, authority responsibility structure. A subordinate has only one superior, and the superior has control over the subordinate specifically. A superior can have more than one subordinate, of course. Communication, the backbone of any process in management is communication. The success of the management depends upon the effective system of the communication. Are we ensuring that what we tell the subordinates is clearly understood by them? Do we check out with them whether they have understood by asking them questions? Asking them to explain what they have understood. Do we take it for granted that every time we have communicated, they have understood? These are certain ponderable questions which we need to ask. Because small things, when they are neglected, they become very big things. The pattern of communication and interpretation of different individuals are different. Do we have a system? Do we have a system through which we understand the individual patterns of receiving information, absorbing the information, and interpreting the information into action? This is a lot to be done in this area. We find that there's a dilution of information that comes from top to bottom. One level, two level, three levels down the line, there's a huge amount of dilution, a diversion from what was expected and what is being done and offered. here is a comparison between two types of organization which we come across in every company. We have what is called as a formal organization created by the company, comprising of you and me. Positions are there, and we are brought into the company for whatever we are in terms of our background, qualifications, departments where we are supposed to work. So there's a formal structure created, which is having an authority, responsibility, power, etc., rules and regulations, and we have to follow the policies dictated by the company. At the time of recruitment selection, we sign the letter of appointment, and it is expressly clear that we have to fall in line with the dictates of the company. I cannot choose my senior when I join a company, neither can I choose my peer nor my subordinate. Whatever comes to me, I have to learn to manage with them. So a formal structure has got, it's got classification of activities within the enterprise, indicates who reports to whom, and explains the vertical journal of communication which connects the chief executive to the workers, top to bottom. We have what is called as an informal organization. Informal organizations are something that gets automatically formed by people when they come together. All of you know about it. You joined the organization on the first day. Everybody was a stranger. Within an hour, maybe 2 hours, maybe half a day, maximum one day, you come to know who are my types. And what happens is my types come together. I call them my types. Okay, people with shared values, people who have got same likes and dislikes, certain types of things which they share with each other, the village they come from, the region they come from, the religion they belong to, certain common factors are somewhere noticed. And these people suddenly get bonded faster. So this informal organization is a structure which establishes the relationships. Here the focus is on relationships, here the focus is on deliverables. This is formal, this is informal. Relationships on the basis of likes and dislikes of employees without considering the rules, regulations and procedures. Typically when there's a lunch break, you go to the lunch room, you can find groups of people sitting together and having lunch. If you notice, these groups of people are the ones who come together because they are informal and they have a comfort zone with each other. You will rarely find that all the marketing people are sitting at the table and eating the food. You may rarely find that all the managers at the same level are coming and eating together. You will find what I call it as apna types. They come together and then they start clustering, and there's a lot of animated conversation, free-flowing conversation. They really enjoy talking what they're talking, and they're expressing themselves, and they actually act as a pressure cooker release. What you can't do sitting in the formal confines of your workplace, you do here in the informal organization called the informal group, right? An organization structure clearly defines the duties, responsibilities, authority and relationship as prescribed by the top management. Informal organization is defined by what? Friendship, mutual understanding and confidence are some of the reasons for this type of organization. Personal factors, not organization factors. Third point is each and every person is assigned duties and given the required amount of authority and responsibility to carry out this job. Here, there are no duties. Whatever we do, it arises voluntarily. Imagine going for a picnic with friends. You say that you take care of travel, somebody else takes care of food, third person takes care of something else. Do we rigidly adhere to that all the time? Not necessary. There's a lot of give and take because the context is different. There's no high level of accountability. The only accountability is the relationship that we have. That's all. And that's also very informal. Right? Point number four, it creates a coordination of activities of every person to achieve the common objective. The coordination of activities is very important of every person. In this case, it's a social structure formed to meet personal needs. Coordination or no coordination, we remain bonded. It induces the worker to work most efficiently, a formal organization. Here, there is no place for organization chart. It just happens. Now, why are we discussing informal organization in a POM lecture? Because informal organizations, they say, make or break the organization. It sounds very interesting. Informal organizations, informal groups of people, they form an energy of very strong energy of communication, and they can actually align the workforce towards or against the management policies. So informal organizations cannot be quashed, they can't be removed. Whatever you may try to do, they will anyway happen. They happen in the everywhere, wherever you have formal structures, including in a prison where everybody is sitting in separate cells. You'll find that the informal groups anyway happen when they're having lunch or when they're going out to play a game or something. So informal groups are inseparable. Since they're inseparable, managements have to take a very positive, proactive view of how to encash, how to make the best use of informal groups coming together. And hence, we need to discuss and understand informal groups, informal organizations that exist in every formal organization. Formal organization is seen in the form of a formal organization structure. Informal organizations cannot be seen. It is felt and you can observe it through a period of time. Right? So the process of organizing, how does it flow? That's what this chart is telling us. Determining activities, grouping activities, assigning duties, delegating authority and coordinating the activities. We have a typical organization chart which is depicted here. There's a chairman. Now these are all designations. In one company they may call him a chairman, another designation may be a CEO, chief executive officer, and various companies give various designations. Designations are fancy titles according to me, because at the end of the day, what is the work am I doing? Is it enhancing my skills? Is it making me grow in every which way is a question. Next comes, in this chart we find the chairman. To him is reporting the president, and to the president are reporting 1, 2, 3, 4 vice presidents: VP finance, VP marketing, VP production, VP HR. And to each of the president, now this VP finance, this particular line, vertical line, is handling all finance functions. So to him is reporting the finance manager, and down below now they say he is a person who is responsible for the money part of the company. So everything and anything to do with money is handled by this group of people. Vice President Marketing, to him is reporting the marketing manager and the customers. Customer is not directly reporting to him, but the marketing manager is reporting to the Vice President Marketing. And this person, this particular department, it takes care of the customer and his needs. Similarly, Vice President Production, the production manager is reporting to him, and he is responsible for the machines and the methods of how we produce it. As a matter of fact, methods is common to all of them. Methods is pervading in every function. Then comes a VP HR, to him the HR manager is reporting, and these people are responsible for the men aspect of the organization. Right? So that is giving a very simple depiction about how an organization chart looks. All of you must have seen it. There are much more complex charts which organizations have. The organization in which you are working, please go and refer to it and check out how this organization chart needs to be understood and interpreted. Okay. Now we come to the second part of the discussion, which is talking about theories of organizing. Theories of organizing means there are organizations that are made, and the organizations are made with certain purpose and focus. When I make the organization chart, the focus of organization, depending upon the line of business into which they are, could vary from company to company. So the theories of organization are actually depicting what is the focus a certain organization gives and why. So let's get to understand this. The first theory is a classical theory, which is as the name indicates, classical. It is the first organization that gets formed when a company grows from simplicity to complexity. And this theory is based on the following four principles: division of labor. The production of a commodity is divided into the maximum number of different divisions, and the work of each division is looked after by different persons. Delegation. And the scalar and the functional process is followed as a point number two. The scalar process deals with the growth of the organization vertically. The functional process deals with the growth of the organization horizontally. And the scalar principles refers to the existence of relationship between superior and subordinate. It is giving you that under classical theory, how the organization looks. Division of labor. Next comes scalar and function processes. And the third one is the structure that it gets created. The organization structure may be defined as a prescribed patterns of work, related behavior of workers, which result in the accomplishment of organization objectives. And the fourth one is a span of control. The number of people reporting to one senior is called a span of control. If six people are reporting to me, my span of control is six. It means an effective supervision of maximum number of people by a supervisor. Having said that, now what is this classical theory? Classical theory simply says that in this type of an organization, the focus is on the organization structure, meaning people work in a formal structure only in this organization. And the formal structure becomes the guiding principle of the organization's working. Whenever you are in doubt, whenever things have to be effectively done, this organization policy says we must follow only this structure, the classical theory. I may want to get things done by going away from the structure, by getting into something else, the organization will not accept it. Most of the organization follow this as a starting point. But there are modifications which we are discussing now. What's a modification? We find that in a classical theory, things become too formal, too rigid, and many a task is fulfilled not by formal approach as we know, but it is done by other approaches. I need to focus elsewhere as well. So we go to the next one, which is called the neoclassical theory. The neoclassical theory is based on the human relations movement behavior. This organization says we have a structure, but with the structure, we also give importance and focus to the way people are behaving with each other, and behaviors do matter as an important parameter of performance. They encourage behaviors which bring results. It is not the formal structure alone. If, for example, I am reporting to my marketing manager as a marketing executive, I may have a very good rapport, a good human relations, a good behavioral equation with maybe the person from the production. Maybe the production manager, who is one level above me in the production department, with whom I have informal connection. This is where the informal organization comes into picture. Since I have an informal connection with him, I am able to network with him and get things done. So such an organization which believes in the neoclassical theory will say, doesn't matter, get it done. So long as you get it done, promote these behaviors. They will not quash these behaviors. They will allow it to flourish. If it's an organization which solely believes in the earlier one, classical theory, they will not encourage this. But this organization will encourage this. In fact, they'll say, more the merrier, more networking, getting things done, lovely, go ahead and do it. They promote this. Now comes a modern organization theory. In the modern theory, it includes the systems approach, the socio-technical approach, and the contingency of the situational approach. To put it in a nutshell, the modern theory says, get the work done, anyhow, within the legitimacy of the organization structure. Socio-technical means, socio is about social equations, technical is about the core domain area of the company's working. Automobile manufacturing unit, its technical is cars. A software company, the technical is software development. So socio-technical coming together, socio-technical approach, and the contingency of the situational approach. If things are going wrong, if a situation demands something, act upon it. Don't worry, we are behind you. So the modern theory is applicable in most of the new global companies where they say get things done. I don't know how you do it, but do it. You can use socio approach, technical approach, socio-technical approach. You can use contingency, situation, any approach. So they believe in the results. The path by which you get the results need not be through the structure, need not be through the neoclassical alone. Then we come to the motivation theory. This is very common in service sector. In service sector, people tend to lose their motivation when they're working with customers. Because customers can be too demanding, customers are not always right. And sometimes even with the best of intention, the motivation of the highly spirited service person might go down. Now such an organization would like to keep their people afloat, all the time motivated. Because when you're dealing with people in a service sector, they suck each other's energy. Sooner or later you'll find that you're actually playing to somebody's psychology. And so it becomes quite stressful. So the motivation can come down. Such an organization would give a lot of emphasis to the motivation of the people. So they would take up initiatives, training programs in line with the keeping up the motivation of people higher and higher. Right? So it is concerned with the study and the work of motivation of employees of the organization. The works are performed effectively if proper motivation is given to the employees. The motivation may be in the form of monetary or non-monetary. The idea is to see that they don't lose interest, they don't feel disillusioned, they don't feel cynical about their jobs, they still feel the hope of mankind and human relations. See, service sector, for example, today 80% of business is service sector. What really happens is, I know promising youngsters who are highly service oriented, you know, they love to deal with people. They get burnt out and overexposed when the company does not give them proper motivation. And the very people with whom they love to work, these people start getting into just the opposite thing. They start hating them. I see this in many hospitals, for example. You know, all the various people who are actually wanting patients to be better off, you know, they really have a lot of love for, you know, healing and, you know, helping people heal and all that. If you notice in some hospitals, you find that, you know, I'm not talking about the modern hospitals, I'm talking about the older generation hospitals. You find that, you know, there are too many numbers, too many things happening, and the hospital administration is virtually absent in terms of giving them motivation. So these very nurses, these very doctors, these very paramedics, you know, you find them actually not motivated enough, and they treat people shabbily, unknowingly. It's something which we see and experience sometimes. Now, if that organization realizes that these people have to be motivated because they're dealing with such type of crucial human relations, then maybe these people would be much better off. All good human beings. Everybody is a good human being. But when these things do not work, one has to notice it and make the changes happen. The motivation theory is one of the most powerful things that can work in any organization. Motivate people and they'll move mountains. There's no doubt about it. Finally, we come to decision theory. Organization has a structure of decision makers. Here the emphasis is on decisions. Who takes the decisions that click gets rewarded, gets importance, gets the emphasis. As simple as that. This decision theory is employed in very, very crucial projects, defense projects, projects which are involving very crucial nature of make or break. So there, you know, the decision making is quite complex and not everybody has got the guts to do it. There emerges a leader, there emerge a few people who have the guts to do something. So when they take the decision and actually perform results, they are rewarded, and decision making is given a lot of importance in such organization. Not the hierarchy, not the structure, not the behavior, but decisions. Crucial projects run ideally on decision theory. That brings us to the end of this session, my dear friends. I'm sure you've enjoyed it, and thank you very much.